Herzlich willkommen bei Business for Future, dem Podcast für zukunftsorientiertes Wirtschaften. Wir wollen gemeinsam mit euch herausfinden, wie Menschen und Organisationen Verantwortung für gesellschaftliche Herausforderungen übernehmen können.
Und wir zeigen konkrete Beispiele, wie wir mit einer verantwortungsvollen Wirtschaft Zukunft gestalten können. Dafür sprechen wir mit Menschen, die den Mut haben, Dinge in Frage zu stellen, über spannende Visionen und verrückte Alternativen.
Wir sind Hanna Rauterberg und
Franziska Schölmerich.
Und wir freuen uns, dass ihr dabei seid. Viel Spaß beim Zuhören.
Today we are learning why inner growth is so important in order to deal with the meta crisis our civilization is facing right now, on an individual, organizational and societal level. We are discussing why we need a shift in our worldview and why the ability to deal with complexity can help us to manage a societal transformation. We cannot imagine a better guest for this topic than Thomas Björkman. He's passionate about transferring leadership development that he experienced in the business world to a societal level. That's why he co-developed the Inner Development Goals, an initiative inspired by the Sustainable Development Goals. He organizes retreats that focus on inner growth for young and older people with his Oak Island Foundation in Sweden. He wrote several books and is a member of the Club of Rome, to name but a few of his projects. We talk about his own maturation journey, examples of governments and organizations that already work with the inner development goals, and what we need to do in order to enable a more elegant and beautiful future. Enjoy.
Welcome, Thomas. It's great to have you as our guest today.
Thank you. It's great to be on your podcast. Thank you.
We would like to start with the question, who are you and what made you the person you are today?
So I'm Thomas Björkman. I'm a serial entrepreneur. I'm a former investment banker. And now, since almost 15 years, I'm running my own foundation in Sweden, the Oak Island Foundation, Ekskäret Foundation, where we are trying to look into the relationship between personal inner growth and development and societal change. And that might seem to be quite far away from my previous work and studies. I studied mathematics and physics and a bit of economics, and then been working as a serial entrepreneur in IT, property and banking. But I think that my years in business was actually very formative for what I'm doing right now. Coming from an economics and natural science background, I discovered fairly early in business and in banking that business and certainly also the market is perhaps best understood from not a economic, natural science, mathematical perspective, as we are trying to do in neoclassical economics, but rather from a sociological or even psychological perspective. So my entrepreneurial years and my years in banking really got me into trying to dive deeper into sociology and psychology and really try to understand both how the market, but also how society and how we human work and function. And if I should mention something in particular that has made me into what I am today, I think it was the fact that I had the opportunity to work with some very talented leadership development consultants who showed me and my management team not just the importance of understanding this lifelong inner development growth journey that we are all on, but also the possibility to promote and facilitate such development. And I had the opportunity to participate in some personal development, management, leadership development retreats, and I could really see the effect these retreats had on both myself and on my management team and on our ability to both cognitively but also emotionally be able to handle the complexities in our business world in a much better way, but also the effect that had had on certainly me and some of my colleagues also in our private lives. And that naturally made me ask the question, if we in business, or at least in some parts of business, understand the importance of lifelong inner development and growth, and we are even spending large amount of money to help our at least top managers to develop further on this lifelong journey, how come that we are not at all in society in general talking about this lifelong inner development journey? We are certainly in society today talking about lifelong learning and the fact that we might in the middle of our life need to completely reskill, we might need to learn to program or something else, but there is no focus at all on this maturation or wisdom journey that we are all on, and that are so important, not just for our individual lives, not just for our ability to function in a more complex business world, but certainly also for us to function well in a more and more complex society. So that's where I decided that I really want to try to dig into to see how we can get a deeper understanding for the importance of inner development for the sake not just of the individuals, but for society at large.
Let's dive a bit deeper into your own personal development. You said that you were guided by some very talented leadership coaches. I'm interested in knowing what were the most important areas of development for yourself. Did you have any of those famous aha moments? And can you describe the journey you went through a bit to us?
So, no, I have to disappoint you a little bit there by saying that I haven't had any awakening moments. My foundation, the Oak Island Foundation, we are working on some projects closely together with the Norrsken Foundation in Stockholm, Technology for the Common Good Foundation. And the founder there, Niklas Adalbert, he has in many podcasts told the story about how he, during a leadership development retreat in his 20s, had a more or less instant awakening experience and started to see the world immediately with new eyes. I'm a bit envious, and I've heard other people in my surroundings that have had such experience, and I'm a bit envious of those experiences. I think my shift and development has been, like for most people, more gradual. And I sometimes, when I talk or over dinners, ask people around me, if you look back on your life and to where you were in your early adulthood, when you were, say, 25 or even 30, are you the same person today as back then? And I can certainly say that I am definitely not the same person as I were when I was 25 or even 30. I think just going back and look at my life and say, I'm now 64, I'm a completely different person in many ways. Of course, at some basic level, we are the same person, of course. But the way we relate to the world and the way we perceive the world, and not just the world, the way we perceive ourselves, our close relations, the way we perceive our work, the way we perceive society, the way we perceive the planet, other people, future generations. For me, just going back to when I was 45, that was a complete shift. And looking back from 45 to 25, that was also a complete shift. So even though the shift has been gradual, it has certainly been fundamental. And just this fact that we can, and perhaps that a rich life should involve this sort of fundamental development or unfolding of our way of being and relating in the world, that is part of a healthy human life, is not really in our public discourse today. I mean, today we are supposed to be more or less ready with our inner world and our cognitive and emotional faculties when we are 20 and we are full citizens, we got a right to vote, we have come to an age of majority. And then we should more or less be like that and be happy workers and consumers until we retire. And then hopefully we have a few good years and then slowly we will wind down and eventually die. That's sort of the story. But I think life is much, much more interesting than that, and that we would benefit from, just like we had in previous times, in previous worldview, and we certainly have in indigenous worldviews today, a story about our lifelong journey and unfoldment and all the difficulties and challenges we will face on that journey, but that it is rewarding to face those challenges and go through those moments of perhaps pain, but also growth. And that is not just part of life, but that is a very important part of life and something that we should encourage and even seek out.
And I mean, as I said before, I'm super excited to talk to you today, Thomas, because when we met first, which is not too long ago, I just realized there's such a big political dimension of this inner growth, because of course I'm, as a psychologist and learning enthusiast, just love learning and inner growth, but it's not only about my individual path, right? There's a societal dimension to it. Can you explain that to our audience? Why is it so important in these days especially to take time for inner growth and development?
When we are in these big times of societal change, and I certainly believe that we are right now as humanity in the Western world and perhaps in the whole global civilization going through a very deep societal shift. And I think that this shift is at least of the level when we went, say, a couple of hundred years ago from a medieval society with a religious dogmatic worldview into a new worldview, a scientific rationalistic worldview, and into a modern industrial democratic society. And that was a very, very turbulent time. And we had wars in Europe, we had the Napoleonic Wars, and the whole world was in turmoil. And then during modernity, we have had relatively stability in our worldview, even if we have had all the world wars and all of that. But I think that we are now at a shift where both our societies, our way of producing, we have AI, we have the automatization of white-collar work. We will start to question the purpose of work, the purpose of our lives, this rationalistic worldview that has been so fruitful for humanity since the Enlightenment. That worldview has, of course, given us things like modern medicine, human rights, and democracy, and a lot of things that we would never want to be without. But it somehow feels like we have come to an end of that worldview, and that we are clinging to that worldview, and the old way of organizing might actually be part of the problems that we are causing. So when we are again going in this period of uncertainty and without external guidance, we need as individuals to have enough psychological resources. We need to develop enough psychological resources to be able to actually handle that world, that complexity, both on a family level, business level, but also on society and planetary level. And as psychologists, of course, you know that when we humans, we face these external challenges, if we do not have enough inner resources to handle that, then we very naturally, for our survival, for our individual survival, we develop different kinds of defenses. And that is what we are seeing around us right now when we are facing environmental crisis and crisis with democracy and other things, that so many of us cannot cope with the intensity of these crises. And we develop psychological defenses, like, for example, plain denial. The environmental problem, they do not exist. They are conspiracy, something made to control us. I don't believe in that. That's denial. Or other psychological defenses like rationalization, saying that, yeah, we have the problems with all of this, but what can I as a single individual do? I just focus on my family and on my survival. And these are very natural ways of reacting when we are facing daunting challenges. And on some level, you could even say that for the individual, they are actually serving the individual because it makes the individual at least cope with the most immediate tasks and do not break down in depression or schizophrenia or something, but actually helps the individual. But it doesn't help society. So we actually need to help as many people as possible in our society to develop enough psychological resources to be able not just to cope with everyday life, but to have the possibility even to thrive as individuals in a complex world, and even have the resources and the psychological space available to want to contribute to a better society and a better world. And that is sort of the simple answer why focus on inner development, helping people develop inner resources, are important for the individual, certainly, because the individual will have a life of more well-being. But it's also important for democracy and for the planet.
Yeah, one of the things you mentioned is the ability to deal with complexity, which makes sense to me that as the world around us gets more complex, all the people in the world also need to go into training and need to adapt their dealing with complexity skills.
And it's important. Sorry, I just want to say many people, when we talk about complexity, just associate that with cognitive complexity. But of course, here we are talking about cognitive complexity, but also emotional complexity, relational complexity, and complexity in many different ways.
So multi-level complexity. What is your approach? How to help people or guide people to strengthen their skills in dealing with complexity on multiple levels?
Perhaps I could then mention one project that I'm involved with, that my foundation has been involved with from the start. And that is a project called the Inner Development Goals, the IDG project. And what we've been trying to do there is to take this very complex issue of human lifelong development, inner development, consciousness development, and to break it down into a very simple language. Some might even call it too simplistic language, and explain what this could mean in a language and a framework that is accessible to any corporate or organization or individual today. So what we have done there is that we have gone out and taken input from 1,000 different practitioners, psychologists, HR people, therapists, and really asked the question, what inner capacities and skills do you think are necessary for us to develop in order for us to be able to meet the global challenges for humanity? And then we are working together with an expert panel of psychologists and developmental coaches, and came up with a framework of 23 different skills and capacities. And we divided them into 5 dimensions. And if I start with looking at the different developmental dimensions, we are talking about the dimension of relationship to self, and we're calling that being. We are talking about cognitive skills, calling that thinking. We're talking about extending the capacity of caring for others and the world. We call that relating. A group of social skills, collaborating, and skills to drive change in the world. And we call that acting. And it is first of all important to say that we only wanted to, in this framework, include skills and capacities that science clearly show that we as individuals, but also collectively, have a possibility to develop. So I just name a few of these skills and capacities. So in relationship to self-being, we have skills like openness and learning mindset, self-awareness, presence. In the cognitive skills, we have critical thinking, complexity awareness, perspective skills, sense-making. In relating, we have appreciation, connectedness, humility, empathy, and compassion. In collaborating, we have communication skills, inclusive mindset and intercultural competence, trust. And finally, in the acting, we have skills like courage, creativity, and perseverance. And again, it is important to say that the good news is that all of these skills can be developed. So for example, if we take the capacity for empathy and compassion, science clearly show that we have a possibility to both deepen our ability for empathy and compassion and also to extend it further into further and further circles of care. The bad news, or the not so good news, is of course that these skills, and for example empathy and compassion, cannot be taught in any traditional school environment sense. To be able to develop all of these capacities, you need to employ methods like transformative learning or immersive learning, where you really access deeper psychological levels, and the development of these capacities do take time. But there are a lot of scientifically proven methods. For example, to develop empathy or compassion or just perspective skills, your ability to both seek and understand and actively making use of insights from different, sometimes contrasting perspectives. And this is what we do in our retreats. And this is even what we are doing with our youth camps that we have every summer. So these skills, you can start to train as young children, as adolescents. You can train them and develop them as young adults, but you will never be fully developed in any of these skills or capacity. You can always be better at seeking new perspectives. You can always be better to be able to deepen and to extend your empathy. So that is the sort of challenge that we are facing.
Let's get even more concrete, because I took part in the Inner Development Goals Summit in spring this year, and I think Costa Rica signed to use those IDGs. How can I imagine that? What did they commit to do? What's following after this now for Costa Rica? Do you know that?
Yeah, we are very happy that Costa Rica, as the First Nation, has adopted this framework, just like many big corporations have now started to use this framework in different ways, like IKEA, Telia, Ericsson, Spotify, to name a few. But it's important to remember that this is just a framework, and you should see the IDGs a little bit like the SDG, the Sustainable Development Goals. It's a communication framework that helps us to put a focus on these inner challenges and give a common language for it. It doesn't necessarily prescribe exactly how you should do it, like the SDGs do not provide solutions for the environmental problems. They're just pointing out different categories that we should look at. Having said that, we are developing within the IDG project a small, what we call the field kit, with examples of how you can go about working on these things. So what Costa Rica, for example, have done then is to say that in all the government departments, they will use the framework as a guideline to see when it comes to further education and development program for personnel, that they use this as a guiding framework to make sure that you focus on all the different aspects of inner development. And you can also use it like that for yourself as an individual. You could start by reflecting around these five dimensions and asking yourself, where am I? Where are my weakness? Where are my blind spots? And if I look at myself and reflecting around being, thinking, relating, collaborating, and acting, I would say that my strengths are probably in the thinking and the acting side, and perhaps a little bit in collaborating, because those things I've been developing as an entrepreneur during my business years, whereas my weaker spots are certainly in my being, in my relationship to self, and also in relating. And just that simple reflection on yourself in relationship to these dimensions can give you a little bit of a hint where you might find areas for development. And then you can ask yourself, well, if I want to develop my relationship to myself, where could I find something suitable to do that? And that could be a retreat, that could be that you find a coach, that could be that you go in therapy, you might start meditating, or you might use the non-profit open source digital platform for personal growth and development that my foundation has been developing during a few years together with the Norrsken Foundation that I mentioned earlier, where we use a technical platform for deep video, authentic video meetings, and giving the possibility for those on the platform to explore themselves and explore their way of relating to themselves, to other people, to society, and to the planet.
This is the 29K platform you're talking about?
Yeah, it's the 29k.org. That is just one way. If you want to just start trying and you don't have a huge budget, you want to find something that is completely free and you want to dip your toes into this of inner development, then starting at 29k could definitely be one starting point.
We definitely put that in the show notes. It's really worth checking it out.
Yeah, it is. I already had it, Thomas. I just realized.
Okay, great. And that shows, I just stay one more second there on technology. Of course, I believe that doing this inner work is absolutely best done in small groups, in real life, authentic interpersonal meetings and exchanges. If you can do it even out in nature, it's even better. That is what we are doing at Ekvaret. But of course, going on such retreats can be expensive. And it isn't easy to scale. So that's why I'm very happy to say that we have been able to show that we can actually replicate these authentic meetings that are taking place at our retreats. We have been able to replicate that in video sharing sessions, and that we are able to go almost as deep in our sharing and development programs using video conferencing compared to actual physical meetings. And that is, of course, very promising.
Yeah, very big value for everyone who knows how deep you can go into those retreats, right? And how fruitful that can be. I would like to go a little bit back to, you call it meta crisis we are facing right now, because you said before that this inner growth or inner development is important to handle complexity. And I think we were so far talking more about the individual level of being more resilient, but as I understood you, it's also super important to really face the global challenges we have right now. So let's go back to, why are we in this meta crisis, or how would you describe this? And which kind of state are we right now in this world?
Yes, that's good. And it's also important to state that all of these capacities that we have been talking about, even though they are inner capacities, it does not mean that they are individualistic capacities. So we develop them as individuals, but we also develop them collectively. And culture is very important in this respect, because you can have a culture that is more supporting, for example, open learning, perspective taking, compassion and empathy, And you can have other cultures that are less conducive to expressing those capacities. So the IDGs, we develop them individually, but also collectively. And that is an important point. And then going to the meta crisis. So why do we have this meta crisis and what is it? Well, the meta crisis is a way of saying that all these crises that we see today, like the environmental crisis, the crisis in democracy, the psychological ill health crisis, the obesity crisis, economic crisis, all of those are not really separate crises. It's not just that we have a polycrisis, that we have many crises going on at the same time. No, when we talk about the meta crisis, we mean that these are actually symptoms of some underlying meta crisis that can explain all of these crises. And what is this meta crisis? Well, you can say that it is a crisis of our worldview and of our meaning making. And again, as I said earlier, we had this fundamental shift in worldview and also in our being when we went during the Enlightenment from a pre-modern, medieval, religious, dogmatic worldview into the modern, scientific, rationalistic worldview. And that has given us so many things, as we said. But I think that the power of that paradigm alone, that singular focus on rationality and science, that is actually what is now causing a meaning crisis and a fundamental crisis in society. So we need to take the postmodern critique of modernity seriously. But the postmodern worldview, as good as it is at critiquing the modern worldview and pointing out hidden power structures and helping us to see through many of the things that we sort of take for granted in modernity, the postmodern critique of the modern worldview is not enough to rebuild a new society. So we need some sort of reconstructive postmodernism or a post-postmodernism. And that is what some thinkers in this field are calling a meta-modern worldview. And what that new worldview might entail is too early to say, but it's probably picking up the best aspects of all the previous worldviews and not making the mistake again, as humanity has done when we have gone through these worldviews before, that usually we have completely discharged previous worldviews. So when we had the modern worldview, everything in the pre-modern worldview was just rejected. And the same with the postmodern critique of modernity, everything in modernity is really rejected. So what we need to do now, I think, is to take the best from even going back to indigenous worldviews, to religious spiritual worldviews, to the modern scientific worldview, the postmodern critique of the modern worldview. And that is, of course, a very, very much more complex way of looking at the world, because you then need to look at every issue from many, many perspectives. And that, again, demands more psychological resources of the people living in such a worldview. It's much more simple to live in a religious worldview where you find every truth in a book and you can sort of say that anything that happens is just God's will and you are born into a position in society. Even if you can have a lot of suffering there, of course, it demands less psychological resources. When you then go to a modern worldview where you have to invent your life as an individual, where you have millions of possibilities what to do with your life, you have a lot of freedoms, that puts more demand on yourself, but you still have a relatively simplistic, rationalistic, scientific worldview. If we are now moving into a world that is so complex that you need to constantly see the world from many, many different perspectives, perspectives that might even be contrasting or create paradox, that will demand even more psychological resources from those living in such a worldview. But I think that that will be necessary for us to take the next step and to be able to save both democracy and to save the planet. We can't stay in this simplistic worldview of us and them, and we build a wall, thinking like that.
Yeah, so Thomas, you're also a member of the Club of Rome. It's a club with members of different backgrounds that published Limits to Growth already in 1972. And since then, they have been very active in enhancing sustainable development. And can you tell us a bit about what is the atmosphere within this group of people like at the moment?
Mm. Yes, I think we are in a shift also within the Club of Rome. We were very early. You could say that the Limits to Growth was really the first scientific report on the planetary boundaries. They were not called planetary boundaries back then. It was based on the first computer simulation of the limiting resources in our world, and was done at the MIT computer lab already in 72. And that was an important stepping stone when it came to the scientific study of the planetary boundaries, the limits to growth. Since then, the Club of Rome has continued the work very much from a natural science perspective. And I think that we for a long time believed that if just enough scientific evidence for the seriousness of the situation is put in front of politicians and the general public, action will be taken. But now, 50 years later, it is very clear that as important as the scientific knowledge about these challenges are, we need to know the facts before we can do anything else. It is not lack of knowledge now that is limiting our ability to take action. And I think there is a growing, it's not yet dominating in any way, but there is a growing awareness within the Club of Rome that we need to complement the natural science understanding of the environmental challenges with both a sociological understanding that these systems, governance systems and market systems that we have created, that are human creations, has actually created very, very strong lock-ins in a system that it is very difficult for humanity to break out. And those systems, again, as we said before, cannot just be understood from a natural science perspective. You need to have a sociological understanding of those human-made systems and our possibilities to change them. But there is also a deepening understanding that we also need to employ psychological understanding and psychological perspectives and even philosophical, and you might even say theological perspectives, if you go even to, because these are existential challenges, individual and collective existential challenges. So how can we really understand that on an individual and collective basis? And it's about our human meaning making and the understanding of not just what it means to be a human today, but what it means to be humanity. What is humanity? Why are we here? What is our individual, what are our individual, but also what is our collective purpose? And those questions cannot be answered from natural science or sociological perspectives, that they are answered from psychological or even spiritual perspectives. So there is an awakening there, but perhaps not enough.
Okay, so do you think our civilization will survive?
That is a good question. And I think that we are, yes, rapidly, if we are using a system science language, approaching one of those bifurcation points, tipping points again, where incremental change is not possible for the system. So the system comes to a point where it will either have a breakthrough to a new, more elegant, more complex and more elegant way of organizing, or face a breakdown, a fragmentation. And I think the transition will be emergent, meaning that fundamentally we cannot say what the result will be, and therefore we cannot manage and control the transition. But I do think that we can do a lot of things to support the transition. And as in any complex system facing a system change like this, the most important thing that we can do in order to increase the odds of a positive emergence is to deepen the capacity for the different components in the system to relate in new and deeper ways. And of course, in the human system, the components are us humans. So it is super important that we can deepen the way that we relate to ourselves, to each other, to society, and to the planet. I think that is the most important thing we can do. It's even a necessary condition for a positive emergence, but it's not sufficient. There are lots of other things we need to do, but that is one thing that we certainly need to do. And if we do that, and if we become self-conscious about this societal transition and our role as agents in that system, if we enough many people become self-aware around this and actually step up to that responsibility, yes, then I think we have a pretty good chance of a positive outcome of this societal transition. But it is in no way given. And the fact that I believe that there is a possibility for a positive transition, that is what gives me the hope and the strength to do the work I do. So yes, I have hope, definitely.
Thank you so much, Thomas. That was super inspiring and interesting.
It was a great pleasure talking to you. I'm looking forward to meet in a more elegant and more beautiful world sometime soon.
Thank you. Thank you. That was great.
Franzi, what are your main learnings from our conversation with Thomas?
Yeah, before talking about my learnings, I want to share that after the conversation with Thomas and also after listening to it again, I was left with a feeling of excitement and hope because, of course, in the current situation, it is easy to feel frustrated and hopeless. But there was a certain spirit in the conversation that reminded me of a kind of journey that I did a few weeks ago, which was called The Week. And it was designed by Hélène Guérin and Frédéric Laloux. And it was a very powerful experience that focused on dealing with emotions that come up when you think about the future. And despite all crises and catastrophes, just as in the conversation with Thomas, I felt like going on an adventure, not really knowing what will happen, but with a subtle feeling that the future will be better than the current present, and that I really have the chance to contribute towards it. I will include the link to this journey, The Week, in the show notes, and can definitely recommend you to check that out.
I also felt quite excited after this conversation with Thomas and the ones I had with him before, because he made me realize that there's a political dimension to learning into inner growth, which for me is really eye-opening, to be honest. And I also really liked the idea that he said, whenever a worldview was changing, times were instable and shaky. So as he said, we had this shift from medieval society with a rather religious, dogmatic worldview to scientific, modern, industrial worldview. And then from this to from modern to postmodern. And right now, again, we need to challenge our worldview. And of course, we learned so much and we got so much from the modern times, like medicine, human rights, democracy, and so on. So it's not about leaving that behind, but it's about integrating indigenous wisdom or a spiritual worldview, or realizing that there's more to this word than analyzing the little dots. So I think it's both. It's super challenging times we are going through at the moment, and I think it's going to be even tougher. But there's also a huge potential to that, especially if people are getting more and more aware of this and we are able to act accordingly.
Yes, talking about this change in worldview also made me reflect on my identity as a researcher. And it had this somehow a bit painful insight that I need to maybe unlearn a lot of what I learned in the last few years being trained as a researcher, being trained to look at very specific tiny details in a very specific area. And I think what we need today is no longer looking at details in a niche of a research field, but really the ability to look at the whole system and relationships within the system. So the conversation with Thomas made me realize that I really need to strengthen my meta skills and get the big picture in addition to what I learned in my scientific training.
I also really like the fact that there are already concrete examples of governments who use this idea of connection between inner growth and development and democracy building. For example, the Scandinavian countries, which have built retreat centers in the past to foster inner development and growth and through the strengthened democracy, which you find described in Thomas' book, The Nordic Secret. So in the past, this had worked already, and by now it's Costa Rica, which says we want to commit to those inner development goals. So that makes me really happy to hear there are people in decision-making responsibility who already know about this connection.
Yeah, and this focus on inner development really made me realize the importance of it. You knew it all the way, Hannah, but I remember several discussions we had where I always had the position that it was more important to change the structure and the business models of organizations. And you always said, well, yes, but isn't it more important to change the mindset and the skills of people? And the conversation with Thomas really made me realize the importance of this part. And also the connection, of course, between the inner development and then changes in business, in society. And I like that he was always looking at these four areas. He always considered complexity and also relationships on the level of the person. So self, other person, others, the society, and then the planet. And using the inner development goals to reflect on myself a bit like he did, I found out that I'm quite good, I think, in relating to others. So other people I work with, for example, friends and family and people in my surrounding. And I also feel a connection or a relationship to the planet and nature, but I could definitely work on integrating or making room for this connection more in my daily life. And then what I also think is a very interesting idea is that relating to others also includes future generations. And the ability to really care about or feel compassion towards future generations, that is something I would love to work on. I'm not really sure how to do it, but if there's someone out there who feels the same, please let me know and let's work on this together. I think this is very interesting and important part of relating to others. And I would really like to strengthen my skills in that area.
Yeah, I think that's a very nice concept, actually, to train empathy for future generations. And I was also very curious to learn from Thomas that those competencies like empathy or perspective taking can be trained, that there's a lot of research on that, because also this is one of the topics I was interested in for quite a long time. And now to learn that there's even research saying this is possible I think that's pretty cool. And what I also took from the conversations is that he said, yes, our society can survive, but we all need to take action and we all need to contribute. And I remember a conversation I had with a friend where he said that democracy is nothing we can just consume. So I think everyone should take an active part in this, because we cannot say, well, the politicians, they should serve us with democracy, but we should think about what's our contribution to a society we want to live in, I think.
And there were several moments where I had to think of the conversation that we had with Ella in the previous episode. For example, when Thomas said that the most important thing to ensure a positive future for humanity is that we deepen the capacity to connect and to relate to each other. Just like Ella also focused on the connection between people and similar things such as compassion, relatedness, that are available without limits and without crossing the planetary boundaries that she talked about when she described her utopia.
I also liked a lot that Thomas was talking about a maturation process we all need. And I mean, I've done this hero's journey, which is a very nice learning opportunity. And the concept behind also says that we need several rituals or maturation steps in our life. And I think we have lost that a bit. As he said, that by 20, we should be ready and finished as adults and be consumers and workers, and that we don't have this concept of lifelong learning. Of course, we have it in our working life, I guess, but not in society saying, okay, we need to mature as personality our whole life and we need to take actions in this.
To me, this was also kind of an aha moment that he said, well, of course, nobody would argue that leaders need training because they have to deal with complex situations. But in our society, we don't have this common understanding that we all need training because we have to deal with more complex situations now and in the future. So I think, yeah, just like you said, it's really, really important to transfer this concept of lifelong development from the business context to societal level. All right. Well then, thank you for listening. As always, please share the podcast with a friend if you like this episode, and see you next time.